This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in, and happy graduation Sunday to all those folks at UVA. You know, when I graduated, it was 100 degrees or so, and so thankful to the folks about four seats down from us who brought their cooler with them. I don't know that beer is actually the best thing for you to drink during really hot days, but it sure was nice on that Sunday. And a special thanks to those at 91.9 and Harrisonburg's 95.1 for tuning in. Our conversation today, Arc of the Piedmont. When you hear titles like that, I'm like, what do they do? Exactly what is that all about? And so my research is Arc of the Piedmont. They help folks with intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. And we have Lisa Potts here to talk with us about this. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Thank you so much. I hear you're the super sub.
I am the super sub.
John Santosky may show up a little later. I think he decided to sleep in. All right, executive director, he called on you to step up to the plate for him. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Lisa is the residential director at Arc of the Piedmont. Lisa, I used like four words, intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. A little more, please, about Arc of the Piedmont, because I'm assuming that I'm not the only person who reads that title. And, you know, you can always go to National Autism Association or, so many other groups that with what they do, the words of those involved is in the title, Arc of the Piedmont. Why that title and what exactly does the organization help with?
Well, the Arc of the Piedmont is an organization that was established in 1954 primarily as a group for advocacy for persons with intellectual disabilities. And when you hear the words intellectual disability, developmental disability, oftentimes those two things are combined with each other. Intellectual disability, of course, is the current terminology for what people used to say was mental retardation. That terminology is considered outdated, and we see intellectual disability is what we refer to it now. But we also work with persons, oftentimes when they have an intellectual disability, it is often coupled with a comorbid diagnosis of physical disabilities, which are the developmental aspects, as well as could be mental health issues as well.
Did you say comorbid?
Yes, sir.
C-O, and please drop that right now. No, sir. C-O-M-O-R-B-I-D, comorbid?
Correct. Yes.
Explain that a little bit, because that sounds frightening.
Well, it's actually a term that's been used for many years when we're describing somebody who has more than one challenge, if you will. Somebody who has an intellectual disability, somebody who may have a physical disability, someone who may have a mental health diagnosis along with having an intellectual disability. So it really is just a term that means it's all-encompassing, can be more than one diagnosis.
So just because you are intellectually disabled doesn't mean that you are not physically disabled, and that works both ways.
Correct.
Now, I guarantee you, we're both, I say this to you, Lisa, and to others who are listening, I am sure that I will say something that is incorrect to use. And so part of the show is to help me and others who are listening. If we say the no longer approved, what did you say earlier, that mental retardation is out of date, outdated? Is that the phrase you used?
It is. I personally, don't necessarily think that's poor terminology. There are a lot of people who still use that phrasing. But the more current, what they would consider more appropriate terminology would be intellectual disability.
Can you say that folks with, and I think I'm going to switch occasionally to some of the short-term words that I see on the Arc of the Piedmont website, which is ID, for intellectual disabilities, or DD for developmental disabilities. Again, Lisa Potts here, residential director from Arc of the Piedmont. Is it okay to say that they are suffering from this or stricken with it?
I think that there are, in the community, I think there are people who would describe it as that very thing. Again, I think that's something that is old terminology or past tense. You know, our values with the Arc of the Piedmont, of course, are to treat everybody with dignity and respect, to recognize that they may have a challenge. I think that we feel like everybody has a challenge, even if you're not necessarily diagnosed with intellectual disability. But we don't necessarily believe that people are suffering or stricken with. We want to strive to see people in the community living a life just like you or I would live, participating in the community, and you know, having quality of life. So we don't really, I don't believe, see it as being stricken with an illness.
It certainly, I guess, puts the negative tone with it when you say that someone suffering from, and there you go, I use the word suffering. I don't know if that's correct either. Intellectual disabilities, and you say that they're stricken with it, certainly puts it in a negative tone. But what is it? Is it challenged with, or, I mean, how do you talk about it? If I were to go to the Arc of the Piedmont building somewhere in the Park Street, I believe, in downtown Charlottesville, if I were to visit, if I were to stop by to offer my my help or volunteer in some way, how do I carry on a conversation so that I'm not blushing all the time or having somebody say, we don't say that anymore?
Sure. Well, we refer to the people that we provide services to. First of all, we refer to them as people. You know, first of all, we always believe that everyone is a person first, regardless of what your challenge might be. And we refer to the people we provide services to as people we support. We think it's important for people to understand that, you know, we're not here to tell people what to do or how to live their life or to impose upon them what we think the quality of life issues are, but we're here rather to support that person and what they believe is best for their life. And again, we refer to them as people we support.
As I, you know, you mentioned now, I think twice, that one of the goals of Arc of the Piedmont is to advocate for folks, to make sure that they are receiving the same care and, I guess, rights as everyone in the community. When you say that, it makes me feel somewhat shamed that this is even needed, that someone needs to take someone else under their arm and point out that this is a problem, that you are not treating this other human with the same rights as that person walking on the downtown mall. Or I want to talk for a minute about how big a problem this is.
Well, I think there's, if you go back in time where people were living only in institutions, where people were not being supported in their community, you know, there was a period of time where people were able to admit their child, whether it be an adolescent or an adult child, to what we know of as a training facility, and have that person basically live their entire life in an institutional setting, which from all appearances would look like a campus setting. And it was all inclusive. So people who lived there received their care there. They ate all their meals there. Anything that was considered at all recreational activity was on the grounds of the facility. There was no getting out into the community and exposing one to all the things in life that you and I would have access to. An example, I worked with a gentleman many years ago. He was in his 60s when I started working with him. He had lived with his family his entire life. And after his parents passed away, it became a real issue about, you know, he's in crisis, of course. Where is he going to live? Who's going to take care of him? And I remember one of the most profound things for me was we went to the movies. He had never seen a movie on the big screen. He was completely fascinated by seeing a movie at the theater. Whereas for me, I take that as an opportunity, something I could go and do any given day of the week if I chose to do so. So we advocate for people to be inclusive in their community, be accepted by others. We do have, you know, people still who believe that persons with intellectual disabilities might be dangerous, which is not true. There's a lot of stigma, if you will, that goes with having an intellectual disability diagnosis.
We're going to get into this a little later in the hour because of a recent court, court decision, yes, between the Department of Justice and the Commonwealth of Virginia. But you use the word training facility. What in the world was being trained? I mean, what are you being trained for? You said go back in time. At the time, what was the process and what were you being trained to do?
Well, initially, I believe that the what we now know as training centers, there is actually active teaching and participation with the people who live there to develop skills to make them more independent. But many years ago, that really was not the case. It was more of a housing facility for people with intellectual disabilities. So many, many years ago, I can't really say that there was much training that took place in what we know now as training facilities, where there actually is teaching going on today to help people navigate the world and learn some skills to do that.
Again, Lisa Potts with us today at WNRN. She's from ARC of the Piedmont, the residential director. We're discussing ARC of the Piedmont and what they do with those challenged with intellectual disabilities, or ID, and developmental disabilities, DD. Developmental disabilities being a physical.
Developmental disabilities being somebody may have on the autism spectrum, for example, may not be an actual diagnosis of intellectual disability, formerly known as mental retardation, but could be more of a pervasive developmental disorder or the autism spectrum.
How does ARC of the Piedmont, and ARC of the Piedmont is a regional,
yes,
but there's ARC of Virginia and there's a national organization as well. How does any organization includes such a wide band of individuals and families? Because as I said, it's from autism to cerebral palsy, and the percentage must be, I mean, you know, when you talk about 1% or 2% of the nation, and when you include all those, it's got to be, what is the percentage of people that fall under your care?
Well, we have, with the ARC of the Piedmont specifically, we have 7 homes in the community, and we serve approximately 75 people. And when I say that, I'm referring to not just the city of Charlottesville, but also the outerlying areas, Nelson County and Louisa. And I say that intentionally because we believe it's not only important to serve people in our immediate city area, but recognizing as an inclusive community, we do have people who don't live here in the city, but they have needs as well. So certainly we want to expand our service area to include those folks. People that are in our services typically either call us directly seeking services, or they go through Region 10 Community Services Board here in Charlottesville and talk to someone in case management to be referred to us. And there are certain criteria. We certainly have to make sure that somebody has had a psychological examination, that they do have a diagnosis of intellectual disability, that we are able to actually provide them with appropriate services. Receiving services, though, can be a challenge. There's a long waiting list in the state of Virginia. There's an urgent needs list, which is also very lengthy. And we are dependent upon receiving what's called a waiver, someone to receive a waiver so that they can participate and choose what services they would like to be in.
11:15 here on the Wake Up Call. If you have a question or want to make a comment on the topic, Lisa is here for the hour from Arc of the Piedmont, 979-0919. Participate in our program if you'd like.
WNRN presents Groovin' in the Garden this summer at Lewis Ginter Botanical Gardens in Henrico. The season continues on Wednesday with Josh Ritter with David Wax Museum. Tickets for Josh Ritter and upcoming shows like Carbon Leaf on May 30th are on sale at groovininthegarden.com. Gates for all shows open at 5:30.
WNRN and Blue Mountain Brewery present the Red Wing Roots Music Festival, July 12th through 14th at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. Hosted by the Steel Wheels and featuring Del McCurry Band, Sam Bush Band, Tim O'Brien, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and J.D. McPherson. The full lineup and tickets can be found at redwingroots.com.
WNRN is brought to you by James River Float Company, inviting you to experience the James 7 days a week near downtown Lynchburg. It's river time. James River Float Company offers canoeing, kayaking, and tubing trips, plus whitewater rafting trips on Balcony Falls. You can take a fully guided day or overnight trip. All amenities are provided for overnight trips. FloatVA.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for listening. Our guest today, Lisa Potts, residential director from Arc of the Piedmont, assisting folks with intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. I just want to toss this out there. Before we get back to Lisa, if you are interested in being a guest for a current events roundtable, please email me, rmoore@wnrn.org. I'd like to put together a program with about three citizens. So if you're interested in being a guest for the current events roundtable, you can email me, rmoore@wnrn.org. All right, back with Lisa talking about Arc of the Piedmont. Lisa, earlier you said going back in time.
Yes.
How has acceptance changed, if it has changed at all, for folks challenged by ID and DD into the general public?
I think it's changed a great deal. We do have a presence in the community. We're out in the public. The staff who work with the people we provide services to are always very open to answering questions for people, directing them to the ARC if people have questions. The people that we provide services to are very genuine, very outgoing individuals. And oftentimes, if you're out in the community, they may introduce themselves or want to have a conversation with someone. And that may, in turn, you know, open somebody's eyes to a different way of life and looking at persons with intellectual disabilities in a way that they have not done so before. I think we're very fortunate here in Charlottesville that we have a pretty understanding and a very open community. So I feel like we're very supported here.
Do you think that acceptance is different from an urban to a suburban area?
I don't necessarily think it's suburban to urban area. I think it has more to do with how much education people have and how much exposure people have that makes the difference.
So it's how different somebody is from other people that I may have met in my lifetime?
Yes, perhaps.
So how has advocacy changed? Have the arguments or the things that you need to advocate for, have they changed in the last 50 years?
Well, I think we for those of us who work in this field are somewhat challenged by, it's a very complex issue. We have support, of course, from our state in a lot of ways to go out and provide services for people and expose our folks to a life like you or I would have. But there's also the challenge of funding, where, for example, and you touched on this earlier, the Department of Justice study, of course, they're going to want to empty training centers and have everybody live in the community. And that's going to be a real challenge for us. I'm not real sure that the funding is there to fully support that.
Let's talk about that. We've mentioned it twice now. Tell me and listeners about what this is, the Department of Justice sort of versus the Commonwealth of Virginia, because it went to court.
Correct.
So I feel comfortable using the versus word. So tell us.
Well, it's a very complex issue, but basically what has happened is there is a goal now to empty the training centers who still have people who may be living in those for a short period of time.
So in 2013, we still have folks challenged by ID and DD in a training center. Because when you mentioned that earlier, 50 years ago, I thought, oh, this goes back to some of the other, and I'll use this word, awful things that many states are known for with separation from the general public and those who are challenged by mental or physical disabilities.
That's correct.
And this is still happening in 2013.
Yes. Yes, it is. We still have people who live in the training facilities across the state. Some of those folks that are living there, it's a very complex issue because despite the fact that they want to close the training centers and have everybody move and live in the community, we have people who are living at the training centers that's where they've lived their entire life. To them, that is their home. That is what they know. They may or may not have family involvement, but despite all of the complex issues that go with a training center, there are some folks who are challenging the Department of Justice study. There are some parents who want at least one training center of all of them to remain open so that their adult children can remain living in a training center versus coming out into the community.
I find that I don't know whether to be bothered by that in more ways than, because if the family member, as you said, wants the training center to remain open, and I'm assuming for, I want to say that that's for positive purposes because that's how their family member, that's all they've known.
Yes.
It's like, how do you meet both the law? Because this is in regards to the American Disabilities Act.
Yes.
This isn't just someone who said, we should close these because it's unfair to to others in our society. You're not advocating necessarily that everyone needs to be treated the same. That's certainly part of it. Do you know what's going to happen from here?
Well, I think they certainly have a plan, of a period of time in which they would like to close the training centers. And have people transition into the community with additional supports to be able to do that. But, it is quite the undertaking. There are a lot of people still living in training centers. There are many people who have come out of training centers and currently live in the community. But for many of the people, I think, who still reside at the training centers, have a lot of challenges with their disability. They may have other aspects that are going to require some pretty intense and specific supports for them to be successful in transitioning from the training center to the community. And, the state is really going to have to examine how that whole process is going to happen. I mean, certainly I think that they're looking at it and they've probably talked about it in length, but the funding and the dollars are really going to need to be there to make transition successful. Because once a person is discharged from a training center and living in the community, it is extremely unlikely that if by chance it was not a successful transition, that they would have any recourse of returning. So we're going to have to be very mindful of how we go about completing this process and making it a successful transition for those who are still in our training centers.
I'm Rick Moore. This is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Lisa Potts. She's from Central Virginia's Arc of the Piedmont. We're talking about folks challenged by intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. When we talk about this recent court case, Department of Justice versus the Commonwealth of Virginia, there's all kinds of phrases in there when I'm reading about this, waiver slots, and the overall time frame for making this happen is when, because they're not, like, they didn't say December 31st, 2013, you must close all these.
Correct.
But there is a time frame for making this happen.
Yes, I want to say it's approximately, from what I understand, 7 to 10 year process.
For how many people are currently in the community center?
That I don't know exactly. There are certainly more than one training center across the state. So,
again, 979-0919. If you'd like to participate in today's conversation, ask a question, make a comment, 979-0919, with our guest Lisa Potts. Lisa, we can bring this up pretty easily. You are the residential director for the Arc of the Piedmont. The individuals currently living in training facilities throughout the state will need residences in which to live. Talk about the residents, how this comes about, how it works for people who, because this is what it is, it's not living at home with caretaking by your immediate family.
Right. Although that is an option. Residential services is somewhat of a inclusive term. We do have, with the Arc of the Piedmont, residential services, which is a traditional group home setting, if you will, where you may have individuals who may or may not be related to each other living in a house with direct support professional assistance.
Sort of like a dorm?
Sort of. And we also have in-home services where we do go in the community and provide services to people who do live with family and provide them with activities of daily living and teaching assistance in their home. So we do have your traditional group home services, we have in-home services, and the most current service is called sponsored residential. And that is actually where a family member may in fact have a son or a daughter with an intellectual disability living at home. And that parent can be their actual service provider. So they can go through a process of becoming a provider. And the person then is able to remain in their home and receive services.
Again, Lisa Potts, she's the residential director at Arc of the Piedmont. All sorts of questions going on today. I just, in some ways, I have such a hard time grasping this in any or in enough of a manner, and I guess somebody else does too, because we have Avtar. Hang on a second. And caller, are you with us?
Yes.
You have a question or a comment?
Yes, I do.
We're ready.
Comment?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is Avtar Moore. Thank you so much for this station, because I think the news that you all bring each Sunday is really pertinent to our lives versus probably a lot of the news that we hear. Again, I think it's a wonderful program. The comment I'd like to make is that we have these facilities that the federal government decides they're closing down, such as the ones you're talking about. Mental facilities have putting people out on the street that our help, the facilities help to integrate them with society to the best that they can. And when they're closed down, the police forces now are having to deal with the mental hospital, people that they're not really trained to do. And I'm not sure if that's going to happen with the people from your facility, but it's just a real shame that the federal government is pulling the funds from these facilities, but we can subsidize things like corporations and corn and various things that are less pertinent to the integral functioning of each of our communities. That's the comment I have to say.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in. Again, 979-0919. If you'd like to call and make a comment, today's topic, Arc of the Piedmont, serving those challenged by intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. Our guest, Lisa Potts, she is the residential director. Lisa, certainly funding. We don't have to step very far away from where we were with finding residents and homes to incorporate those who are challenged into our community. Funding is a big part of making that happen. You already said that not sure where the funding is going to come from to meet the requirements from the Department of Justice. How does Arc of the Piedmont subsist, and what changes, if any, have you noticed during from the state of Virginia or the federal government in meeting all the challenges that you come forward with Arc of the Piedmont?
Well, for persons that we provide services to, we bill for our services what is known as Medicaid waiver dollars. And so here we go again with this waiver terminology. So folks that receive services do have criteria that they need to meet to be eligible for services. And then they are given by the state what is called a waiver slot. And that terminology comes from a person is actually waiving their right from living in a training center to live in the community. So there are certain dollars associated with that by which we are able to bill Medicaid, and it's Medicaid waiver dollars. The Medicaid waiver rate is a low rate. Virginia is one of the lowest ranking states in receiving a returnable dollar, if you will.
Explain that to me a little more. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Does that mean we're using as little money as possible, or we're one of the cheapest states in helping people?
Well, what it means is we are actually receiving very few dollars of all the states. Virginia ranks very low in its reimbursable rate.
Again, I'm not sure I understand whether that's good or bad. Is that explain that to me in terms of we're cheap and providing not many people, or we're great because we're very efficient?
It means that certainly with the dollars that we are given, we do not at all skimp on any services, of course, but it's a real challenge at times to be able to, look to how are we going to meet all of the needs without the state of Virginia increasing that dollar rate so that we can have more money to work with. You know, it's the old adage of here's what you have, make use of it.
So I will politely say, less politely than what you're saying, which is we don't have much of a budget. Our state is one of the states with the lowest dollars to use given to us to work with.
Correct.
Okay.
So what we're hoping is with the transition, of course, with the Department of Justice study, that we recognize that people coming out of training centers who are the few, if you will, that still remain there, are going to have some significant challenges and some significant needs. And, we're looking for that reimbursable rate to go up so that we can make sure that we do, in fact, have everything that we need to be able to support people and make a positive transition. I wanted to comment, the gentleman that called in with the comment, I understand what he's referring to. Many years ago when they closed large mental health facilities and people were basically discharged to the street, you know, it wasn't very good planning. And we saw a rise in persons then going in and out of psychiatric facilities and things of that nature. So I think with that experience, certainly the Department of Justice is being very mindful of that. We don't want a repeat of that, and we want to make sure that we're able to provide people with what they need for them to be successful.
Again, our guest today, Lisa Potts. She is the residential director at our area ARC of the Piedmont. Call up if you have a question or a comment to make, 979-0919. Ring us up.
Support for WNRN today comes from Italian Villa, Charlottesville's old school diner at Emmett and Ivy. Before the game or after church, the Villa serves a full American breakfast all day. You can find burgers and specialty sandwiches for lunch, plus weekday lunch specials and an Italian dinner menu every night. That's Italian Villa, 129 Emmett Street North.
Michelle Knuckles, mortgage banker with Westar Mortgage, joins our members in support of independent music radio WNRN. Westar can help with a purchase or refinance from first-time buyers to jumbo loans. You can reach Michelle at michelleknuckles.com. Two L's in Michelle, N-U-C-K-O-L-S.com. Westar Mortgage is an equal opportunity housing company. NMLS number 198053.
Support for independent music radio WNRN comes from the State Theater of Culpeper, inviting you to a Groucho Marx Film Festival on Friday, May 31st, introduced by modern-day Groucho Frank Furanti. You can return for the weekend's feature performance, Frank Furanti as Groucho, on Saturday, June 1st. Tickets at the State Theater box office and culpepertheater.org.
Hi, I'm Gary Hart, inviting you to a family-friendly cultural mosaic of dance. Almar Ballet Theater and the Studio for the Performing Arts present their 9th Spring Dance Gala at PVCC's Dickinson Theater on May 18th at 6 p.m. This 1.5-hour fantasy and fun-filled show includes performances taking you through a safari, on cultural journeys, and back to the roaring 20s, to classical, jazz, and contemporary music. Tickets are available online at aballet.org/tickets, at ABT Studio in Crozet, or at PVCC on the day of the show. For more information, call 434-823-8888 or visit aballet.org/performances. I'm Gary Hart, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for listening. This is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Just a note, we are looking for a second producer for the show. Angie will be going away to college later this summer. If you have interest in the program, you're available to volunteer on Sundays, and you have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. You can email me at rmoore@wnrn.org or stop by the station and talk to our volunteer manager. All right, back with our guest today, Lisa Potts, residential director at ARC of the Piedmont. Lisa, we were talking about funding, and we'll get back to that. It's certainly a big issue for any community organization. But I have in my notes that there's an event coming up in just a few days.
We do have an event coming up. Thank you for mentioning that. We have our annual dinner, which is Thursday, the 23rd, and it's at K-Tech. And K-Tech is one of our partnerships in the community that we're very proud of. And we will be at that dinner recognizing our direct support staff who do a wonderful job at providing care every day to the persons that we have in our programs. We will also be having Jim Stewart present, who is the commissioner with the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Services, and Jamie LeBon, who is the executive director for the State ARC in Richmond.
All right. We had a caller online. Maybe you were calling in to remind everybody about this upcoming dinner, but if somehow we lost you or you were a bit impatient, 979-0919. Ring us back. Lisa Potts here, ARC of the Piedmont. You know, we talk about funding, and we got into that just a little bit, but has funding, what sort of funding do you get from the state?
The state dollars that we receive, again, is for the services that we actually provide.
Has that increased, decreased, remained the same over the past decade or so?
Well, I would say that it's increased, but it's increased nominally. It's a very, very minimal increase. You know, through the course of 18 years that I've worked in Charlottesville with adults with intellectual disabilities, I have seen that rate increase really minimal. And it's going to continue to be an issue. It is an issue, and it will continue to be an issue, as I said, as we continue to bring more people into the community. Certainly, we have to be able to provide those folks with services, housing, daily living needs, staffing. You know, all of those things are essential, and the reimbursement rate is a nominal amount.
So while the dollars may have increased a bit, the number of people that you're servicing has increased more, and the dollars per person has actually gone down?
Well, the dollar rate per person is about the same. But it's kind of that adage that, you know, you're given what you have to work with, so make it work. So, you know, it's always a challenge of trying to make ends meet with expectations from the state to do more with less, if you will. So not saying the rate is going down, but as we are handed more, we also need to see that rate increase.
11:42 on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Our guest, Lisa Potts from ARC of the Piedmont, 979-0919. Call up with your question or comment. Lisa, we really haven't gotten much into the various programs that are offered at ARC of the Piedmont. I want to make sure and do that. Some of these I find fascinating is the right word, but I didn't know that they were there. I didn't know that they existed. And once I read about them, I'm like, oh, I can see how incredibly important that would be because not all of them, and the first one I'm going to bring up, isn't specifically for someone who falls under the ARC sort of bubble. The Infant Development Project.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the Infant Development Project does work, obviously, with infants and children. And, you know, it's really important that for persons who, for lack of a better way to say it, for someone who has a child, as soon as you recognize that child has some challenges or you are told that your child has a disability, the best thing that a person can do is to, like I said earlier, call the ARC of the Piedmont directly or call Region 10 Community Services Board and speak with somebody about how do I go about getting my family member or my friend into services. There's a long waiting list in the state of Virginia. We don't want somebody to be, you know, 65 years old, still living at home with mom and dad, and then when mom and dad pass away, then it's a crisis. What do we do? So it's important that when someone recognizes that their child has challenges, that they pick up the phone and call someone and ask, what do I do to get my child into services immediately? The Infant Development Project certainly is a very important project for that reason.
And maybe I misunderstood, but one of the ways that I read the description was that to participate mm-hmm. as a parent with a child, you don't have to wait until the doctor or someone else officially signs a piece of paper saying that, yes, your child is challenged by, you know, these issues. Any parent can sign up and ask so that someone from ARC of the Piedmont can provide more, I guess, you know, whatever word I want to use, can provide more definition to what a problem may or may not be.
That's correct. Yes, we would always encourage someone to call. You know, we can walk someone through the process if the need be, but that first phone call is the most important phone call.
When I read about this and a parent, especially a new parent, undergoing the concerns and the questions that go through this, because I'm sure you do, how does Arc of the Piedmont help the family members who are themselves not challenged by ID or DD?
Well, certainly one of the things, again, that the ARC is known and was initially established to do was education and advocacy. So we do certainly want to provide parents or family members, friends, with as much information about an intellectual disability, a developmental disability as we can. And we also want to make sure that people understand that just because someone may have a diagnosis of an intellectual or developmental disability, we want those persons to participate and have a quality life just like you or I would have. So we don't necessarily want someone to see it as a challenge in a negative way, if you will. But we're certainly more than willing to provide them with education and help them navigate what can be a very overwhelming or complex system.
But certainly there's intellectually informed must be different than emotionally secured. Does Arc of the Piedmont help in any way with that and helping the parent feel better about what's going on? Giving the parent the day off from helping the child, the adolescent, the adult that they're responsible for as the number one caretaker?
Yeah, we do have, again, one of our services that we have for adults is the sponsored residential program. So if you are a parent and you have your adult child living with you, we do, of course, ask that that person have a backup provider. So that way, if you decide that you want to go somewhere, you want to do something, you need some time for yourself, the person that you're providing support to still has somebody with them, but it gives you the opportunity to go out in the community and run errands or you know, go somewhere, do something for yourself that you might otherwise feel like you're not able to do.
There's also a community center, correct? It's not all just at home, not just at home. And when I read the title community center, and I'm sure I'm incredibly inaccurate on this, is my thought is, let me drop off my child for the day so I can go do other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the community center provides that, but also much grander scale than that.
That's right. We have three what we refer to as adult activity centers. We have one here in the city of Charlottesville. We have one in Louisa County, and we have one in Nelson County in the Lovingston area. And we have people who attend those programs. They could be people who live at home with family. They could be people who live in our residences and go there during the day. And the day support programs or the adult activity centers do provide education as well as teaching, helping people with activities of daily living, going out and being present in the community for activities, not necessarily large group activities, but it could be individualized one-on-one activities as well. So they do a variety of programming and skills building as well as social supports for people.
When you say skills building, what are you talking about? I mean, you're talking about learning how to cook?
Yeah, it could be learning how to cook. It could be working on goals that would be important to you or important for you that are specific to you as an individual. Your goals, of course, may be different than mine, but the activity centers are there to help people with those individual goals.
All right, we have a caller. And let's hit all the right buttons. Hi, caller. How are you?
Okay. I just wanted to ask, when the state has a surplus of funds, are there any other avenues you can do to request or try to get more, more of that revenue? Because, as the indication goes here, that the state really doesn't put these facilities as a priority at all, obviously. And society as a whole is so ignorant about mental health issues and stuff. Well, they can just go get a job and straighten their lives out. I quit going to a church because of that attitude because they had toward those people. But they'll fly everybody out of the country to help when Haiti or Honduras gets blown out of the water. But, you know, there's just such an incredible turning away from that issue, which is a real issue, and it's becoming, as this population grows, that population grows also, and it needs to be addressed fairly and in a healthy manner. And without the funding, I can't believe our governor. I don't care who knows me on the air and sees me in the street and wants to give me a hard time, but it's no secret what I think of McDonald's. He makes me feel better about my intellect. Anyway, what can you do to try to get more of that funding when they keep saying surpluses, surpluses, surpluses? VDOT keeps getting it, and the more of this revenue building infrastructure that everybody wants around here now, is going to put more pressure and take away more from the facilities that need to help people who cannot help themselves.
All right, let's let Lisa. Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. It's a really important observation that you have there. And, you know, when we talk about surplus dollars, I can tell you that in the 18 years that I've lived in Virginia and worked with adults with disabilities, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say to me or to an organization I've worked for, we're going to give you a surplus of dollars. I wish that was the case. Unfortunately, it's not. You know, we do go to Richmond. We do go various places, the Arc of the Piedmont, and meet with legislature and advocate for the services that we provide. And a lot of the folks that we provide services to, the people that we support, want to go to those functions and, as well, and advocate for themselves and introduce themselves and say, you know, this is what I want to do with my life, but I need your support to do that. And I think those are very powerful moments for people. It's because they're actually meeting a person with an intellectual disability who is advocating for themselves better than what I could ever do, actually. But historically and current, we can always ask for those dollars, but there's only going to be a percentage allocated, whether it be for developmental and intellectual disabilities, whether it be for mental health services or substance addiction. You know, we're really dependent upon, we can advocate as much as we want, but we're really dependent upon what they decide the outcome of that will be.
Again, our guest today, Lisa Potts, representing Arc of the Piedmont, as we discuss intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. Thanks for the phone call. We can take another one if you'd like. 979-0919. Ring us up.
WNRN is supported by the Bud Light Concert Series at the Intellos Wireless Pavilion, presenting Grace Potter and the Nocturnals with Trombone Shorty and New Orleans Avenue, Wednesday, August 14th. This rock band from Vermont continues to tour in support of their most recent release, The Lion, The Beast, The Beat. Tickets are at theintelloswirelesspavilion.com.
State Farm agent Larry Whitlock joins our members in support of WNRN. State Farm agents understand insurance and share a genuine concern for others. Larry Whitlock helps people in the Charlottesville area find products for their insurance and financial needs. From homeowners, renters, and car insurance to retirement planning, Larry is at 101 East High Street, 434-971-9966, or at LarryWhitlockAgency.com.
And whether you're an Apple or an Android user, it's easy to get WNRN on your phone. For Android users, we recommend the TuneIn app, which is available at Google Play. Willow Tree Apps has created the WNRN iPhone app, which you can find at the App Store or at WNRN.org. Just click on Listen to download the app. All right, we have another caller. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Question or comment?
Hi, I am the parent of a blind son. He was not blind at birth, but he went blind. So I basically thought, well, what happens to him if something happens to me or my husband? And we're not young. It's the fifth of our children. He was the youngest, and he's 16 now. We had a difficult time trying to get him a decent education. and we're on track now, so it's going to take a little bit longer because he's physically challenged and not mentally. And I know that the state has kind of grouped them all into the same category. I know that from the Stanton School for the Blind, they've combined all of these types of disabilities to educate, and it's kind of difficult for the ones that are not mentally challenged to be with the ones that are, and I don't know about the other way around, they can't even socially interact as well. But I did visit Horizon House. I live in Nelson County, and I've seen your place in Charlottesville where you say it's a drop-off place. They're understaffed and overcrowded with people that don't have very good skills as far as interacting with someone else. So I'm concerned about the future of my son. It doesn't seem overly through the state of Virginia prepared to deal with the magnitude of handicapped people that are coming through the system.
Education system
as they approach adulthood.
Hang on just a second, okay? Because I want to give Lisa a chance to reply to that, but I want you to be able to follow up. Lisa? One of the comments that was in the conversation was that your facility is understaffed, and many of the participants who are actually there are socially challenged.
Well, I think that probably the best approach would be that our activity centers really, again, are for persons who have a primary diagnosis of an intellectual disability or developmental disability.
So what does this caller do? Because it seems to be the other way around, and certainly you can hear the tension in her voice.
Sure. It's a difficult system to navigate, and I certainly am sympathetic to her situation, the caller's situation, because it is something that's, unfortunately, it's not something unusual, but it is something that can be very challenging because, people will be quick to speak to what you're excluded from, but not necessarily what you can do. So what I would recommend, certainly the caller would be more than free to call the Arc of the Piedmont for specific information, areas that you could pursue, ways to navigate the system and direction on that, and or contact Region 10 Community Services Board and ask for someone with their case management program to go through what might be an inclusive list of services that she could navigate.
I had hoped that she would hang on. It is 11:58 on the wake-up call. Just a few moments left with our guest, Lisa Potts, from our area's Arc of the Piedmont. So you could hear the tension in this caller's voice. And what I heard, maybe it was accurate or not, was I heard the dial tone from being hung up shortly after you said sympathy. Because my guess is that this woman has received a lot of sympathy, but apparently not enough help. Do you run into that a lot?
I think that does happen with people. I mean, certainly, again, I am sympathetic to what people face and what their challenges are. So I don't want that piece to be lost because I think it is really important. But at the same time, I think a person not only has to be empathetic about what a person is trying to do and better their situation, but also has to really give them the tools with which to be able to do so. So I think it is a dual process. But again, I certainly wouldn't want to lose sight of providing someone with information, but not being open to understanding what their challenges are that they've already faced in the system.
Just a few seconds left. Tell us real quick, and I'm going to give you 30 seconds if you can do it in that time. What is the New Virginia Way? I found that on the website somewhere. Doesn't fall under your category? Oh, well. I'll have to go. What is the website, by the way?
We are thearcofthepiedmont.org.
Okay, just as it sounds. Caller, I wish, it's not going to be that easy for us to solve the problem, and I know you called in knowing that, a point made about not everyone able to be helped by a variety of organizations. And send me an email, rmoore@wnrn.org, because that may be a conversation to have on a similar but different topic. I appreciate all the calls today. Lisa Potts, Residential Director at Arc of the Piedmont, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tamara Winograd up next for Les Temps Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.
This is Les Temps Perdue on WNRN.
Bueller.
91.9 WNRN Charlottesville.
Bueller.
On 89.9 WNRS FM, Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg.
Bueller.
He's sick.